podcast. Hi, I'm Anna Haynes. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Okay, so my sobriety date is July 18th of 2008. I have a home group. It is Bon Air Big Book. We meet on Wednesday nights at 7:30 in Bon Air, which is like a, what do they call those? Like a geographic place or whatever. I don't know. It's basically like a neighborhood type area near Midlothian in the Richmond suburbs. We meet at the St. Michael's Church out there across from the community center. So please come see us sometime if you're ever over there. And I have a sponsor. I sponsored other women. And just for timeline purposes, I got sober when I was 25 and I'm 40 now. I've been sober for 15 years. I thought I was the youngest person to ever get sober. That is not true, but I always have to be unique. So I will tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and how I established a relationship with a power greater than myself that has given me a new life. And I definitely was not expecting that. I was not expecting to stay sober this long. I really just kind of wanted to get through the weekend without driving off cliff, you know, big goals. I just kept coming back. I think that's pretty much the only thing I didn't do wrong for a very long time, is I just kept coming back and I didn't leave. I grew up in Midlothian, which again is kind of a suburb of Richmond. And, you know, my family, I mean, they're just regular people. I mean, my mom probably has some mental health issues, honestly. Like she's kind of controlling and codependent and stuff. But other than that, I mean, really, like, my family, nobody in my immediate family is an alcoholic. We got lots of prospects, and a couple of people that actually identified who passed, but like in the greater family, but like in my immediate family, there's nobody else. And I didn't realize how much I was like really pissed off about that until I started doing like an inventory. Cause you know, I was always different. I was always kind of a black sheep or whatever. And I was also the oldest too. So it was like really weird, I think. Anyway, that's just to say there's nothing my family did to me that made me an alcoholic, you know. They're good people. I live down the street from my parents now, as luck would have it. They still live in the house that we lived in from when I was like five on, and you know, I live across the street down the road. You know, growing up, I mean, I can say that I felt different than a lot of people. And, you know, I think a lot of people feel different. It's just that the thing that made me feel better, at least for a long time, and appeared to be a solution to my problems until it wasn't anymore, was alcohol, you know? But I didn't actually find alcohol for a while. I really didn't start drinking until I was 18. I drank for 7.5 years and then my life exploded. And I had a lot of resentments, y'all, when I first came in. And you know, you'd like see, and there'd be like, man, be like, oh, I drank for 30 years or whatever. And I, you know, and I was like terrified by alcohol, like the thought of it, you know, just having on my knees. And I knew that the rooms made me feel safe and I didn't know why. And yet I was still really irritated that like there were people who would drink for 30 years, but anyway. But yeah, so anyhow, I didn't find like my symptom or whatever for a while. And I believe that, you know, I believe that if something else had helped me the way that alcohol does, I might have become, you know, that kind of an ick, you know. But I'm an alcoholic because, you know, it's just, I did some other things in my life, but they weren't it for me. I mean, alcohol really was. It was the only thing I could never put down. For a long time, I tried a lot of other things. You know, I would take pills. I would do, you know, I'd like binge eat. I'd do other things. I was that girl that like, you know, even in high school, I was in like every club. I was in chorus. I was in Girl Scouts. I like tutored kids. I did everything so that I would look a certain way on the outside, because I didn't want you to know that I was like terrified on the inside and I didn't think I was okay, you know? And I was afraid that if you really knew who I was, you would reject me. And I mean, I did that. I mean, I would like literally like, you know, trying to off myself with Tylenol in my parents' bathroom, like, one night, and when it didn't work, I'd be like, all right, let's go to the homecoming parade, you know, like, we gotta keep up appearances. I mean, like, that's the way it was, and I was just this weird girl that, like, just could not chill, you know, I had friends, but I was never, like, super close to people, and I had a lot of secrets, even from my friends, because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't let people, you know, be close to me. And, so anywho, I ended up going to college, and, I went to college and I wasn't ready. I was terrified. And I kind of had, like, a breakdown. I'm really not sure what to call it. I also have bipolar disorder, which is an outside issue. And I used to not mention it, but, you know, just like, you know, the recreational substances tend to cross over for some alcoholics, mental illness does for some, and, you know, GSO has lots of pamphlets about it, and if you want to talk to somebody about it, you can talk to me. So I don't know exactly what happened, but whether it was alcoholism and mental illness or what, but I had a breakdown. You know, I got a bunch of pain thinner and I got some wine and I got some pills and I decided I was going to die. And I went to my parents' attic and, you know, it wasn't happening fast enough. So I tried to break a wine bottle, and it's actually really hard to break a wine bottle. I don't know if you're aware, you know, like, if you're trying. I couldn't, because I was going to stab myself because I'm real dramatic. It's like that part in The Big Book where there's a guy and he's like, I'm just going to go to the bar and I'm just going to die, you know, and hide out there. And then I thought I might, like, jump between, you know, like, where the insulation is, like, between the walls or whatever. And I'd just, like, die. Again, it's just, like, this ridiculous, like, crap. But anyway, the banging alerted my parents, and I ended up going to Tucker's. If you're not aware of Tucker's, Tucker Psychiatric is, like, a place in Richmond at Chippenham Hospital where they got, like, one side where if you're... you know, an alcoholic and you got DTs or whatever, they'll put you. And then they got another side where they put the mental illness people. And I've been there 3 times and every time they don't know where to put me. Just to tell you a little bit about me, and what it's like for me when I'm drinking and I don't have a solution. It wasn't this first time, but, there was one time when I was in Tucker's and, I had a roommate who was this woman who, her life had blown up because her, her boyfriend was, like, beating the crap out of her. And then her son tried to intervene and her son killed her boyfriend. So now, like, her boyfriend's dead and her son's going to jail or whatever forever. And I remember being really, jealous of her because she knew why she was crazy. You know, and I didn't know why I couldn't stop drinking. And, I wanted a reason, you know, I wanted something like that, that I could be like, look, it's somebody else's fault. You know, these idiots started fighting and, you know, that's, look at poor me, you know? There was another time I was there and I was in the mental health side and there was a woman that was like literally terrified, feet on the ground because she had some sort of paranoia. And again, like I wanted to be her because nobody was going to ask anything of her and nobody was going to judge her and nobody was going to ask her why she just couldn't be like a good girl essentially or whatever. And, you know, again, like I wanted that. I wanted a reason for my insanity, just, you know, other than like weak will or petulance or whatever. You know, now I know that I have an allergy to alcohol and it's really that kind of simple, you know, that when I put alcohol in my body, I don't have the same reaction that other people do, you know? And that was really hard for me because, you know, again, like I was 25, I'm not the youngest person to get sober, but I was young and I had plenty of friends that I don't believe are alcoholics who still did dumb crap with alcohol at the time because, you know, they were young and they had kids and I don't know. What I've come to understand is that, you know, when people I know that aren't alcoholic, you know, whether they're hard drinkers or whether they're just normal people who got a little drunk, you know, they get physically drunk, right? They don't get spiritually drunk like I do. They don't like, you know, do geographic cures or go out on relationships or like sell like their entire set of morals or their entire history. You know, they don't do whatever they have to do to you and to me and to, you know, my mom to get what I need. They don't do that. You know, it stops for them at like the physical and the, you know, can't drive type situation. And that's never happened for me. You know, I remember one time I was watching a movie with my sister, and there was like a woman and her son and like husband had died in this tragic way. And so she started drinking and she's sad. And then she, you know, like, things get better, right? Because it's a movie. And so she stops drinking because she's not sad anymore. And my sister like kind of looked at me and said, you know, that must be difficult for you to watch. And I said, you know, not really, because I don't drink like that. You know, I don't drink because I'm sad. You know, I drink because it's Sunday. You know, I drink because I'm conscious. You know, I drink because I can't not drink. You know, I will tell you there's a reason, you know, sure as, you know, whatever, that like, you know, if my husband and my son died today and I didn't have a spiritual solution, I would tell you that's the reason I was drinking, but that would not be the truth. You know, the truth would be because I'm an alcoholic and I'm in my cups, you know? So anyway, I backtracked a little bit, but anyway, going back. So yeah, I'm in Tucker's, I'm crazy. I leave that university. I'm like 19. I think my life's over, cause I've failed. And I wasn't failing, to be honest with you. I was getting straight A's. I just like lost my mind. So I went home to live with my parents and I started chain smoking on their porch like it was my job. And that is when I really started drinking. You know, I started drinking because I was like, you know, I mean, back that up, I guess. I went to like a beach week after high school. It's actually beach weekend because my parents wouldn't let me go to the whole thing. But and that's where I had my first drink, and it was a screwdriver. And yeah, I mean, I will tell you that I do. I mean, I'm not going to like glorify it or whatever. It's not like it was the best drink ever, or like I immediately knew I was going to be an alcoholic or anything like that. But I do remember that feeling of like ease and comfort, like it says that, you know, I just felt a little bit easier in my skin. And I felt like for once in my life, I didn't care what you thought of me. Like I was insulated, and I was going to be okay. And I don't know, I've come to know that, like, it's been my experience anyway, that like even alcoholics have different reactions to alcohol. Like I felt powerful, you know, when I was drinking, I felt like, you know, yeah, like I could do anything, you know, and for once, I wasn't weak, you know, and I wasn't scared of you. And I really liked that feeling. So anyway, when I left that university and I was at my parents' house and I was like a broken teenager, you know, that's what I did. I started drinking, and I didn't know anything about alcohol, you know. I remember my parents had like a little, they didn't even have a bar. They had a cabinet, like a lower cabinet that had all the liquor in it. And because they don't drink, it had a lot of liquor in it, you know? And so, cause they do not drink. I mean, my dad, like, I mean, maybe like once a year at a wedding, he'll have like, you know, like a Jack and Coke or something, you know what I mean? Like it's, you know, and they like maybe every once in a while, beer, but like, my mom drank Coors Light. I mean, you know, like, and they really didn't even do it very often. And they kind of like stopped drinking a lot too when I was having my problems, because they didn't even want to have it in their house. But anyway, they didn't know at that point, and they had a bunch of, you know, liquor. And I mixed like whiskey with orange juice at first. Like I didn't know anything about liquor, but I just started doing it because it started making me feel better. And you know, I believe that my disease is progressive because I didn't fall apart at first. You know, like I said, I felt powerful. I felt good, you know, and I went to college. I got some credits. I got this boyfriend. I thought I was better than him. You know, like my life got a little better. And then I transferred to another school, and I got there, and I was in like this apartment thing with like five other women, and you know, my my immediate roommate, she was like this really nice girl, and she was like super Christian, and she was cute, and she was a cheerleader, and she was like really kind, and she wanted to be my friend. And I remember thinking that, like, I can't really be friends with her, you know, like I'm not good enough for her, essentially. And I started being friends with my other roommates, who, like, their own sorority was literally trying to kick them out because they were horrible. Like, I mean, they did everything. Like, they would like get drunk, get Sharpies, and like draw murals on our own wall. Like, we're living in a camp, like a university owned apartment. It is obviously us, and they're like drawing on our wall, you know? So, yeah, so I started running with them, and really started drinking a lot. And then I went to Spain because I was a Spanish major, language and literature. And that's probably where my drinking crossed the line, you know, into alcoholism, because the reality is that I'm kind of a nerd, right? I mean, I loved Spanish language and literature. You know, if you had asked me if I had some kind of dream or whatever, I would have told you. I mean, the truth is that I probably really didn't, because I really just kind of wanted to be, you know, pretty much always, you know, drunk. This girl one time at a meeting was talking about, like, if she could have, like, a town car driver around, like, Mr. Big and Sex and the City, and, like, she would just, like, drink, like, that would be her life, and she'd be happy about it, and, like, I can relate. But if I really believed in myself and thought I could have it, I wanted to be a translator, you know, like, I wanted to live in Europe. I wanted to have, like, little bilingual children who went to private school and had, like, little sweaters. I mean, that's, like, what I wanted, you know, and I wanted to be in museums, and that's what but I couldn't do it, because I'm a Jekyll and Hyde, right? I mean, I would be, like, writing papers and doing all this stuff during the day, but at night, like, I'm just, like, out, and I can't go home, you know. And even, I mean, it's just strange, you know. There was, like, this one night where I left this bar we were all at with this random guy, and, like, you know, everything that you think happened did. And, like, the thing is that tell you about it for at least three reasons. Like, one, I didn't think anybody cared, you know, because I was not, capable of caring about anybody else or myself. And, I was really surprised, like, when all my female friends were just, like, really, like, what the hell, like, are you okay? You know, and all of that. Two, because, when I wrote my friend a letter to tell her about everything that had happened, and she told, like, the program director, and we went to the hospital, I was very angry, because I just wanted to be left the hell alone so I could drink. You know, like, I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't want anybody to help me. I didn't want any of that. I wanted, like, I wrote that letter to manipulate her so she wouldn't be mad at me and wouldn't be my face about my drinking. I didn't write it for help. And three, because I kept doing it. I kept going out. I kept, you know, getting in cars with random people and going to places in Spain that are, like, 3 hours away, because I couldn't stop partying, you know, and I had to keep drinking. And, you know, and that's the thing about it, you know, that's not who I want to be. That's not something I can handle at all on any level. But that's who I am, when I'm drinking, because, all bets are off. And, so yeah, I mean, it was just, like, this thing where, like, you know, it just became gross. And I remember, like, dialing up names on, like, the list of, like, because we had, like, a list that said, like, all the people and, like, their help, because, like, people had cell phones, but they weren't real great in Spain, and you basically had, like, burner phones, like, type deal, because they didn't have, like, great cell plans and anything, so you could call people's, like, homestay parents or whatever, get in touch with them. And I remember just going down the list and, like, calling everybody to apologize for, like, the latest disgusting horrible thing I'd done, like, the time I bit this guy, when I was in a blackout, straight up assaulted and bit him. And I didn't believe it. You know, I thought they were all lying to me. I am not the kind of girl to bite them. He's like, what? You know, and I'm just like, you know, it was messed up. I destroyed my relationship with my best friend that I went to Spain with, you know, and with like everyone else. You know, I pass out with homeless people in front of ATMs. It's fabulous. I eventually leave Spain and a lot of quasi dreams I had. And yeah, I went back to my university and I had just turned 21. So let's do it all again. And got kicked out of the place that I was living because my friends were like, we can't handle this, you know, like, cause you know, I would do great things like, you know, get drunk and threaten to kill myself in front of everyone or get drunk and like, apparently like pull my roommate's BB gun on people and laugh. Like, I'm just like everything I do. It's funny because like, you know, when people say like, oh, I just wanted to drink like a lady, I wanted to drink like not a psychopath. Okay. Because like, I was always doing stupid stuff. I was always getting in fights. I was always like having like men trying to keep other men from hitting me like type drunk. You know what I mean? Like, it was just not good. So I got kicked out of living with my friends. And after that happened, I moved in with these girls who were kind of like me. And it was really great because nobody, you know, messed with my drinking for a long time. What was interesting is that, you know, after we all graduated and one of my friends came to visit me because I was still living in Charlottesville, I don't know, I just found out that she didn't actually drink like me. You know, I thought she did, but she did when she was in college and she grew up and I didn't, you know. I graduated. I graduated with a 4.0. That was one of the reasons why I was not an alcoholic, by the way, because I am smart and, you know, I do things, you know, granted I manipulate my schedule so that I never have class before like noon and like, you know, I'm going in with like dirty jeans I've thrown up on and bar bands and stuff like that. But, you know, like I'm in it to win it, you know? After I graduated, I was like, okay, I am going to change myself, you know, because I kind of realized like things are getting bad, you know, I'm waking up in ditches. It's not good. So, I was like, I'm going to grow up. You know, I got a big girl job. I got like addicted to exercise to replace alcohol because I stopped drinking for like 2 months, I guess. And I lost a bunch of weight. I got a big girl haircut and I was like, I have arrived and, I'm going to be good at this. And then I started dating this guy that was like an ex drug dealer, which, that's not a thing, by the way. And so not that he called himself that, but he's, I'm not selling drugs anymore. I'm just going to drink, you know, like, perfect. We can help each other. I don't really do drugs. I just want to drink, you know? So I started dating him and I changed the way I talked for this guy. I mean, he was like this guy, he was from New York and he like smoked Newports and was in the Wu-Tang and he was like tough. And like, I started talking like I was like this Latina from the Bronx, man. And like, I just, I was like, this is it, man. Like ride or die. Like, you know, I remember we used to go to this club called Rapture. We'd sit against the wall and oh my God, it was crazy. But yeah, that didn't work because yeah, I started drinking again and he broke up with me because I'm crazier than an ex drug dealer. Yeah. And then like within like a month, I was dating this guy who had the exact same name and was like a 180. This guy was in the Navy. He was like a captain. He was like straight laced. And you know, he wanted to have kids. And now I'm like this demure lady that's like, yeah, like that's exactly what we should do, you know? And I'm like making friends with all of his like officer wives people. And like, it's just, it was gross, man. I had like no personality. You know, that guy, I mean, he had some serious PTSD, you know, from being in Afghanistan and I just like shit all over his life, you know? Cause that's what I do. And he dumped me too. And that was like the string of like trying to use, oh, and I ran away from my big girl job. I literally ran away. Like one day I just ran out, because I was like really paranoid and, so that was like the string of trying to use men or jobs or like other things to help me with my drinking. That didn't work. And so after that, I mean, it was like a couple more years of just the same crap. You know, I moved back with my parents, and again, I'm like chain smoking on my parents' back steps. Like, it's my job. And I actually did get a job working at this law firm, like basically answering phones. And the proprietors, they're both lawyers, and like the wife lawyer, like, had just been diagnosed with like really bad cancer. So they didn't really notice that I was like a horrible employee. And so that was like my gig. In this time, I was in the wedding for one of my friends that I thought drank like me in college. And what that looked like was I got so drunk that I started opening wedding presents, like, you know, at the rehearsal dinner, you know, and I was too drunk to drive home and do all the things I was supposed to do because I was in the wedding. And things just progressed from there. And I remember like this one, like it was New Year's Eve, like the year I got sober, but I didn't get sober till July. So it was, you know, a few months, but I hadn't gone out, and I was literally sitting in like a twin bed in my parents' house with like a comforter over my head, because I was like, if I don't leave this bed, I cannot hurt anyone, right? Like, I can't hurt me. I can't hurt anyone else. But and that's what me controlling my drinking looks like, right? Like, maybe if I can live in a twin bed over my parents' garage, we got this, you know? Because otherwise we don't. And the reason I was doing that is because I had been at a holiday party like a week before. And I fell into a Christmas tree. I threatened someone's grandma. Like, I mean, it was real bad. And like, I chased people who were trying to keep my keys, you know, I mean, it was just not good. And at this time I'm like progressively really hurting my family and my friends. I'm like sometimes taking like mental health medication, and sometimes I'm not, and that's making me like even worse. Like, I'm speaking in tongues at times, you know, from like reactions to that, because when they tell you not to drink on those things, they really mean it. I didn't care. And I did things like I put stuff on my wall to be like, you don't have to live like this and stuff like that, you know, and like little notes to myself, but just never worked. I lived with my parents, and I remember I'd get like super drunk and say I was going to move out, and I'd like rip all my clothes out of the closet, and then they just find me passed out on top of my clothes, right? Like, I couldn't even move out of my parents' house. It was just that messed up. And and towards the end, I was driving from Richmond to Crozet and like baiting myself to drive off a mountain, you know, and basically not doing it because I was too scared of like crashing into somebody's house. And the night that I was my last drunk, I got off work at the, you know, receptionist job in the law firm, and I was supposed to have dinner with my sister at this pizza place, and just like anything I needed to do, I needed to be smashed to do it. So I went to this bar called Capitol Ale House, it's downtown, and they serve like bougie German beer, you know, so you basically just, if you're me, you just gotta look at the percentages of alcohol on the thing, and that's what you pick, you know. And so I did that and like pretended not to know that, like, oh, I just ordered like all the high octane beers or whatever. Chugged those, went and met my sister. She gets really upset because clearly I'm like close to, you know, three sheets to the wind already. And I remember her being like, you know what, fine, like, and we're screaming at each other in the street at this point because, you know, because of me, once again. And this was my sister. I have two sisters. I have, I'm the oldest. I have two younger sisters and a younger brother. And one of my sisters was the one that would always come to bars and pull me out, essentially. My other sister is the one who is still a kid on one of the times when I tried to kill myself, and basically asked if the reason that I did it was because she didn't make the cookies right or some shit, because she was making cookies. And it's just, I've really hurt my family. It's not good. It's really great to be in the rooms and be able to, you know, make amends for that. But, But anyway, that night my sister was like, hey, you know, fine, I won't get mad at you anymore. I won't tell mom. I won't do anything if you could just promise me you won't drink anymore tonight. And I remember thinking, like, computer error, you know, like that's not something you can ask me. Like, that doesn't make any sense, because it's not like I have this kind of like huge plan or agenda, right? Like, I drink because I am, and I stop when something stops me, right? Like unconsciousness, or you in my face, or me cops, you know, like I don't, you know, like I can't make that promise. I don't even know how that works. And so we keep yelling at each other, and eventually I run away from her. And that's the thing I did a lot. You know, I just ran away from stuff, you know, like, you know, when I first read the part of the book where it's like, you know, we seem to be angry. Maybe we can walk away and revisit this later or whatever. You know, I was just like, wait, what? You know, because I was always getting invites to summon people and running away. Yeah, I ran away from her. I went to this like bar, and I was playing football with some guy. And then I started drinking Long Island's like it was my job. And then the next day, you know, I woke up in some house and there was nobody there. I didn't have any pants, and you know, that's my life, you know. And it's not like it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. It's certainly not the worst thing I've ever done to anybody else, but for like one moment I just had like this little shiver of hope that, like, you know, the people at Alcoholics Anonymous have to have something better than this, you know, they just have to. And I had been looking on the Richmond Intergroup website, just kind of stalking it, essentially looking at different meetings. I went to one meeting once and decided the people outside smoking didn't look like me, and I ran away because I ran away. But this time I knew something was different and I needed to go. And I saw, it was like a young people's meeting, and I don't even know if they still have it anymore. They've got a lot of meetings at VCU now, but back then, I think it was the only one. It was at the Hibbs building on Friday nights at like 8:30. It was a young people's meeting. And I thought, okay, well, those are my people. My sister like took me to the pharmacy, and then I went and got my milkshake of shame, because I figured that's like what people were sober drink, right? Because they don't have alcohol. And then I'm like driving downtown to go to this meeting. And I remember my sister telling me that, like, you know, if you don't go after you said you would after this time, like, you know, you're going to go to hell, right? And I was like, yeah, I know. But I went anyway. And it was neat, because there were a bunch of people outside, and for some reason they were all men just outside. And I remember I was going to leave, because I was like, the hell with this. I can't deal with a group of men right now. Sorry. Like, because now I'm fine, but back then I couldn't deal with that. And I remember this guy, like, he was like, hey, you look like you want to go where we're going, and you're okay, and you can come with us. And I'm very grateful. I still know that guy today. I saw him on Tuesday, actually. And I am so grateful for him for saying that. And for him and these other guys who just like kind of silently took me up there and didn't say a word to me, and then like passed me off to a bunch of women when I got in there. And it was crazy too, man. There were like 10 women there who were all young, all beautiful, all friggin' happy, all smiley, like they're friggin' in a sorority or something. It was like Friday night, and I was just like, what is going on? Like, I cannot deal with this. Like, I mean, really, like I was like on the way driving there, I was like, all right, fine. These people are gonna tell me to sit on my hands and be miserable, and I'll do that for 50 years and then I can die. Good. You know, like that is really what I thought was going to happen, you know, but I thought at least I won't end up in jail, and, you know, I won't hurt my mom anymore. You know, I mean, that's like, that was like my standards. And maybe I won't go insane, because also I was really like suicidal at this point. And for some reason, for the first time in my life, I didn't want to die. You know, that's another reason why I came here, because I was just like out of options. And I remember this guy started talking, and he was completely different from me. He was like 10 years older, super good looking guy, had an amazing job. He was like gay. I mean, like everything about him was different than me. But the way he told his story, like I remember him talking about, he'd somehow like hurt both his legs. Like, I think he'd like broken one leg and like messed up one of his ankles or something. And he talked about like crunching up the road, like up a hill to get to 7-Eleven to get beer, and just like the humiliation and yet the drive that like he needed to do that. And I was just like, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. And I was really surprised because again, I didn't know anything about AA except for that, you know, you don't drink and the police send you there sometimes, you know, but so I was not expecting to feel like for you guys to share feelings with me or vice versa. Right. Like I really thought maybe you drink like me, probably not. Cause I'm this pathetic loser who's 25 and can't even drink for 30 years. But beyond that, we probably don't have anything in common. It'll be like a grocery store. I'll go in there when I need some milk and then I'll leave and y'all can do your thing, you know? Yeah, I really was touched by that. I was like, wow, you know, I too feel desperately alone and I don't know why, you know, I too have a feeling of terror all the time that I cannot shake. I too do not know why I am so insane and why I can't just put it down and, you know, just act like the lady reading the news, you know, and just go about my damn life, you know, I don't know why I'm broken. But you clearly, sir, do know what it's like to do that because you couldn't talk that way if you didn't, and you are not that person anymore, you know. So when they asked if people wanted a white chip, like I raised my hand, and then yeah, all these women, like they took me out to the Village, which was this restaurant, and again, like I couldn't believe they were all just like having fun, talking about like, you know, dumb TV shows and stuff. One of the girls, like, she got this milkshake with Oreos in it. And she like did the thing where you put the Oreos in your teeth to make them look like you're a hillbilly or whatever. And you have no teeth. And I was just like, I can't, like, I'm going to die. I have real dramatic, crazy problems. I hate myself. And you guys just think it's so hysterical, you know, like I couldn't deal. I really thought they were going to drink. I thought it was all ruse, you know? But it wasn't. And I had a lot of fun and I left and you know, the thing about it, like I told you at the beginning, like I did a lot of dumb stuff. And the only thing I didn't do wrong is like, I kept coming back. I mean, I got a little scared the next day. I was like, yeah, I can't deal with these people, you know, that's just too much. They're a little too culty, whatever. So I went to this party in Northern Virginia, with my friends and the past several years of this particular party, because it was like somebody's birthday, so it like happened every year, like had not been good for me. Like I can tell what year it is by the dumb thing I did there. But I went, and you know, I didn't drink, and I don't know why, you know, because I should have drank, you know, that is what I do. I was very scared, I was very alone, I just met this cult, you know, whatever. But I didn't drink. And I remember like I was sitting there. I went into like their living room or whatever at one point, and somebody had left the TV on, and I flipped through, and I don't know what channel it was, but there was some sort of documentary on, and I started watching it. And I know this is like really super dumb, but like, remember, I'm a nerd, right? And I was like, it was like the first time I'd gone bowling in AA or something. Like I was like, I can follow what they're talking about, you know, like, and then like, I have ideas in my head and I'm happy, you know, like, I mean, you know, and like some guy came in and like slumped down next to me. I was like, I do not have to mess with him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to do this. I don't have to make that choice. You know, like I felt so damn free and happy in that moment. Like, and I was like, maybe this is what they're talking about. And so I didn't drink anything. And then the next day I'm like driving back to Richmond. And of course, oh, and I forgot to tell you what happened. So I was driving up. This is one of the reasons why I didn't drink though. It's the best part. When I was driving up there, like seven of those damn women called me. Okay. Like I'd given my number to all these women and they all called me. And I was so freaked out because I did not come from a place where people called you when they said they were, and especially not like all of them and all like super happy. And like, you know, like the day after, oh my God. So yeah, that is one of the reasons. And like, none of them like yelled at me or said like, you're stupid idiots for going there or whatever. They're all like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, you don't have to drink if you don't want to, you know. And yeah, and then when I was driving home on Sunday, I was scared again because, you know, my little pink cloud kind of burst, and I was driving by myself back to Richmond, and a few more of them called me, And I started crying, and they were like, you should go to Sunday Night Survivors at St. Stephen's in Richmond because it's there and you're insane. And I was like, okay. And so I did. And, going there helped me get to Easy Does It Women's on Monday. And that became my first home group. And I asked one of those women that was with me the first night to be my first sponsor. And and I was kind of a piece of work. You know, I was very people pleasing, but I also like would sort of like just not do like what you said and then act like, I don't know, manipulate you about it, you know, which was great because my first mom, she was having none of that, you know? But I remember one time we went to go read and like the Starbucks was closed because I think it was after a meeting or something. And she was like, it's okay. We can just sit out here, you know, on the picnic table and read whatever. And I was like, this poor woman needs to sit at a closed Starbucks to make herself and her cult happy. I will do her a solid and sit with, you know, I mean, like she's trying to save my life. And I'm like, you know, making fun of her in my head, like, yeah, I'll sit with you at a closed Starbucks, you know? But the truth is that, I was scared to be here, but I also felt very, very comforted. And, you know, people gave me suggestions right away. Like my first thought, she was like, you know, you have a car. Now, granted, I had a piece of crap car that had been in a million accidents, but it ran. And she was like, you can pick up other women. You can take it to meetings. Not everybody has a car, you know? And so I did that. And I mean, I went everywhere, you know, like Ashland, Petersburg, you know, picking up women and talking to them. And I joined a gratitude list that we did, you know, it was like an email thing. And at first it was like, I'm grateful my parents still let me live here, you know, but later it became more and deeper. She had me just doing things. And I remember like one of the first times I was just like washing cups at my home group. And I felt like I am doing a small, clean, good thing that is like putting goodness into the universe instead of taking out of it or blowing it up. And nobody, you know, I'm not like getting kudos for it or anything, but it's just like this quiet, good thing. And I loved that. You know? I just kept coming back and I started doing like service stuff, started doing things with intergroup. I did food for a long, like I did the activities chair type thing for the intergroup picnics and the dances and stuff like that. And and sooner or later I remember I was at a meeting and they were talking about like the second step, and I burst into tears and basically just, you know, blurted out to this woman that who's not my sponsor, but she's like a friend of mine and in my sponsorship family, that like, you know, I was just really scared someone was going to kick me out of AA, because the truth was I didn't really believe in God. And like, I kind of been lying about that because I just really didn't want to have to leave. And I didn't know what to do. And she was like, the whole point of this book is to help you find a higher power. And, you know, it says that like 50 times, but you know, I don't know, like when I was new, I think like, just so much came in my ears and out, you know, like I've heard people say that, you know, like, I don't know, like my home group does a traditions and concepts night once a month. And a lot of people will say, like, I don't want to deal with the traditions and concepts, blah, blah, blah. But I've heard people say that, you know, well, the traditions is what we do with a newcomer that helps them stay half the time. You know, I mean, like, seriously, if you were like, hey, let's make an inventory of everything you've done wrong, like right now. No, you say, hey, welcome. Like, would you like some coffee? You know, here's my hand. Like, this is who I am, you know? I think that's like the only thing that stuck in my head back then, not a lot of cerebral stuff. So I was very surprised when she told me that this book, its entire purpose was to just help me find a higher power. But I took her suggestion and I had a deeper conversation about it with my sponsor because I kind of glossed over it. And she said, you know, Anna, like, I don't have an idea of like a guy in the sky or whatever. I mean, it's cool if you do, but the truth is that I just have good orderly direction and I have a sense of being connected to other things and people. And I think it's bigger than me. And I think it wants me to not drink and to, you know, pack into the stream of life. And you can borrow that if you need to. And so I did for a long time. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I don't know, like one time I was talking to my first sponsee, who was this crazy girl who called me like 3 times a day. And like, anyway, I really needed her and I was very happy to have had her in my life. But I remember talking to her and I just like said some stuff that like was not the kind of stuff I usually say. And then I like hung up and I thought, you know, I think my higher power is working through me, you know? And, I'm not the kind of person who likes to be like, oh, well, let's just take some actions, even though we don't believe in something and see what happens and maybe faith will grow through, you know, like, I don't like that, you know, like I want to understand everything, control everything and have a plan for everything. You know, that's not how it worked for me and it worked over time. And yeah, you know, today, I can say that I do have a sense of a higher power and it's basically the same thing that my first sponsor had, you know, it's like, I don't believe that everything happens for a reason because that wouldn't work for me. But, I do believe that I never have to drink again. You know, I don't know what's going to happen to me. But I believe that there's, you know, nothing's going to happen to my drinking option. And, I really do believe that there's like a force in my life that's strong enough to keep that from happening, you know, if I keep coming back. And so, yeah, I mean, my life today is pretty good, you know? I mean, materially, like, yeah, I got married, which is hysterical because like, I could never like be in a relationship longer than like 6 months, you know? I have a son, I have a real career, we have a house. But the biggest thing is that, I have peace and serenity, you know, like I don't have to drive up to Crozet and like work really hard not to drive off mountains anymore. Like I actively want to live today. And that's a big deal for someone like me, you know? And even when shit hits the fan, you know, like, I mean, a few years ago, like, I don't know, I had like some sort of existential crisis because a bunch of people in my family died like all at once, including my dad's brother, who was only like 60 and he just kind of dropped dead. And he was probably an alcoholic. I mean, he definitely had a drinking problem. And it was like one of those things where everybody was like, don't troll stroke him because he'll just be pissed off. He like, all right. So I just tried to be an example or whatever. But God saw me through that, you know, he saw me through, even just like when, I don't know, I was real ugly and I thought about running away from everything yet again, because you know, and was like this close to my husband's face, like maybe we never like were like good for each other, you know, because I'm just like full of grief and just sadness and like I ruined everything. I didn't have to drink and I had people that showed up in my life and I get to show up for other people. I mean, I have friends who like their son has died, you know, or their husband has died of cancer, like super young and they're 44 and they're a widow, you know, and I've gotten to show up for them. And I don't know. I heard somebody say at a meeting once that he believed that he was as free as anybody is. And I never thought that was an option for me. You know, I mean, if I lived to be 30 or whatever, like I didn't think I'd ever get to a place where like, you know, more or less at the end of the day, I would be as free as other people, you know, like not totally like bulletproof or whatever, but like able to be decently emotionally regular and kind and loving and pushing out good stuff. And, but I feel like that today. And you know, on a good day, I don't even have to like take my husband's inventory because he's also on the program. And you know, I just be like, you do you, man. And our son also has his own higher power. And it's just, it's a beautiful life today. And I don't deserve it. And I really, truly believe that anybody can have it if they just keep coming back and have the humility to just ask for help. So anyway, that's all I have. Thanks for listening to me.